again, everybody. It's Swing Thoughts. I'm a golf spiritual leader. Right there is Coach Tim O'Connor. We're back after a couple weeks of a much-needed break. You know, it's an arduous task pumping out this much wisdom each and every week. It's a lot. Oh, I know, Church. Yeah, don't worry. I'll fix it. There we go.
Wisdom, that's what we do?
Really? Yeah, every week we got to pump out the wisdom, the golf wisdom. I can't tell you, first of all, it's great to see you.
Good to be seen. Yes, it's been a couple of weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah. You know, we got to address this right away because on our last episode, I kind of, you know, because I'm old, I kind of screwed up. Because I said that I really enjoy it, and I'm sure you do too. Hi, everybody. STDs alike. I very much enjoy when people come up and they say hi, you know, for the golf podcast. I guess people have always said hi to me because of this other show I do, but there's a special, I don't know, I get a kick out of it from the golf community. Do you know where I'm getting at here?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's always really nice. I was on the range at Glen Cairn a couple years ago, and I'm chatting away with my buddy Ronan, and he goes, "Wait a sec, excuse me, you do that podcast with Howard?" "Oh yeah, oh, I love your show." And so that's always fun.
It is fun, and what I'm getting at too is last time we recorded, I said I was at Dundas Valley for a tournament, and this guy came up to me, and I couldn't remember, you know, where, you know, we'd seen each other, because I'm at a lot of different golf tournaments, as you know.
Yeah.
And he reached out to us, and the guy's name was Dave Dolman.
Yes.
And he said, "Please let GSL know I'm the gentleman at Dundas Valley whose name he forgot." Dave, I'm so sorry. He said he might remember that we played a match at Bridgewater, which he should remember me as Double D, because that's what I was calling him. That match was talked about on another podcast. Again, forgot about that. Sorry, Dave. And anyway, he says, "Love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Enjoy the break and looking forward to your return." And I just wanted to get that out of the way. And yeah, by way of saying, it's always a thrill. I was at a tournament at Hamilton during our absence. And GSL did well. I played very nicely. I finished third. In the 2 weeks since we've been gone, I've had 2 third place finishes. So, you know, that's feeling pretty good. And it's okay.
Good.
It's not bad. You know, top 3 finish. But yeah. And I got to play Hamilton 27 holes. Amazing golf course.
Yes.
And the first 18 was the U.S. The Canadian Open rotation. So it was the original 18. And then the second or the third 9 is the add-on. Mm-hmm. But same thing happened there. A couple of the young guys came up to me because it's seniors and the amateur, the sort of non-seniors. And a couple guys came up and said, "Hey, GSL." And I was like, "That's right. I do a silly golf podcast." It was very, I don't know. I just get a special little thrill out of it. So thank you very much.
And, yeah, it's good to know that, that people are listening. That's always good. And people enjoy it. So, yeah, that's really fun stuff because, you know, we make such untold millions doing this podcast.
That's right. Good emphasis on the untold. Yeah. Yes, that's right. Coming up on today's show, I've got some great audio from an Olympian that has applications for golf. Plus, I want to talk about this idea, and it came up in a conversation with our good friend Kent Osborne the other day as a little bit of a debrief from his experience at last week's Ontario Senior Am, in which he did very well, made the cut, played all 3 rounds. And I was joking with another one of our friends. I said, "I've got this kind of low-level, you know, depression for not having qualified again, but I got over it." Anyway, or did I? So that's coming up, and yeah, I want to talk about something that I've seen in golf, and I just want to get your opinion on, because you're such a nice person. And I thought to myself, if anybody...
Fooled another.
Pardon me?
Fooled another.
No, if I thought to myself, I'll bring this up with Tim, and I'll see where he lands on this contentious issue.
Ooh, all right.
From the world of golf. And as we're recording this, the 31st of July, I guess the Olympic golf tournament is underway. And I also want to talk just a little bit about that and see if you care about it. In the meantime, let's, of course, thank our sponsors. This program is brought to you by TaylorMade Golf.
What if the golf ball you're playing isn't the ball for you? Meet the all-new TP5 and TP5X from TaylorMade. Whether you prefer the softest five-layer tour ball in the TP5 or the fastest, now a half club longer, TP5X. Play a golf ball that performs like it was built for you. Available in white, yellow, and picks. Or personalize it with my symbol. No matter which you choose, every TP5, TP5X is designed to help your game. Find your number one ball at TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
And of course, this program is also brought to us by TaylorMade Golf, as I mentioned, and Tim.
Yes, and indeed by Oscar Bravo. We are the proud wearers of Oscar Bravo polos, which are amazing, and they're well tailored, and they're stylish, and all those good things. And the other good thing is that if you wear one of those, you're pretty well guaranteed that no one at your club is also going to be wearing it, because they only make 100 of each style every year. So check out whoisoscarbravo.com.
Very well said, and as always, by our friends in Mexico, secretlinks.golf. Go check out that website and make a fall appointment for some very unique golf in a Mexican setting. You'll be very, very happy you did. All right. So the Olympics are going on, and Olympic golf is going on. I never really paid attention to it when it came back in 2016. That was the year that Justin Rose won it. 2020, I guess, was...
The X-Men?
He's Xander Schauffele.
Yeah.
And now it's on again. Why don't we just talk a little bit about... did you watch... I know you were up north. Did you watch any of the Open Championship where Justin Rose played so nicely?
Yeah, instead of being outside in the lovely sunshine and on the dock hearing the water lap against the boat,
No,
I was on my couch watching TV.
Yeah.
Because,
well, you've got your priorities straight.
Yeah, even in cottage country now, they got high speed.
Oh, yeah.
So, I watched, third and fourth round, and, thank goodness we got some real Open Championship weather.
Yeah.
I think that was amazing. We had the rain. I believe it was, the wind was Friday's story.
The rain was Saturday.
Rain was Saturday, yeah. And, it was good to see, because I think it's either an Irish or Scottish saying is "I win, I golf" or something like that. So you need those elements to make Lynx golf that much more exciting, because it is such much more of a ground game, and it just those courses, because the greens tend to be, they're slower than they are over here. If you don't have a good sort of weather defense, they could eat those courses up. So, particularly with how long they hit it these days.
And I was so happy for Justin Rose and having a chance to play. And he played nicely on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. He sure did.
And, but he played very well. I think he shot 3 or 4 under at least. And then, Xander Schauffele shot better. And that's always exciting when somebody plays very well and there's other guys also playing well, as opposed to kind of running away with it. And I'm not surprised that Xander Schauffele, who has been very, very good for a very long time, and it seems to be the case that once guys win one, all of a sudden they get a couple. Like Padraig Harrington was like that. Had sort of been that guy for a long time. All of a sudden won a couple, won three in the end.
Marco Mira, remember him?
Marco Mira, exactly.
Yeah, back late in his career. Schauffele isn't really surprising me. It does take a while, I think, for guys to finally get over the hump, if you will, but he just seems to have it all in terms of great golf swing. For, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he hits it a mile. He's so consistent, but I think overall he's unflappable. He just appears so anyways. He just, whatever happens, he just seems to roll with it. Remember the PGA Championship there? He got kind of a funky lie on the 72nd hole, just dealt with it. You know, and I just think that's one of the things that he does really, really, really well. And just as a corollary, I loved how when he had the big hug with his dad afterwards, you could just see dad behind those sunglasses trying to hold the tears. You couldn't hold back Niagara there.
No, and his father, the story was his father wasn't at the PGA when he won.
That's a good story.
Yeah, it was, all of it was good. And, you know, a nice way to finish off the major golf season. You know, it's always a drag. So now it's like, well, now there's no majors until next April. But that's how it works, Howie.
Something nice to wait for.
I know. And this month is the FedEx Cup playoffs. Next month is the President's Cup at Royal Montreal, where I was very lucky when I first moved back to Canada in 1988. A stand-up comedian from Los Angeles wearing one of my go-to looks was I was wearing camouflage shorts and boots, and I had a ponytail. Yeah, that's right. I had a ponytail. And
well, we're all young ones.
I know. And this is a true story. I got invited. Once I got back on the radio in Montreal, some guys heard that I played golf, and I hadn't played much golf in my 20s. But I got invited to Royal Montreal. And, you know, I showed up in golf attire. I wasn't wearing the camo shirt.
Yeah, I was just waiting.
Yeah. But I did have, this is 1988, I did have the ponytail. And Royal Montreal is a very stuffy, stuffy white guy's golf course. And people looked at me askance, my friend. Yes, they did. They did. Until they saw a young GSL with the ponytail take a practice swing. Because I think when they first saw me, they thought, well, this guy, he does not golf. Well, look at him. Look at him.
This sounds like a movie. You know, this guy shows up, shirts hanging out, on backwards. And then the camera scans the old white guys, and they've got the eye roll and the mumbling. And then he swings it, and whack, down it goes.
Exactly right.
Ooh.
There was a lot of ooing. So that's that. Royal Montreal, I am curious to watch the President's Cup. I mean, it's not as compelling as the Ryder Cup. What are your thoughts, my friend?
President's Cup, no, I can't get that excited about it. It just never seems to grip me that much. Best one ever was in South Africa when Tiger and Ernie Els were going close to darkness. And then I think it was... captains Jack Nicklaus and Gary Player declared it a draw, but it was it never really gets me that much, and I think it's just it's just kind of hard to root for the world, I think, even if Canada is part of the world team. It's just, I think what it speaks to is it's kind of hard to manufacture passion.
Yes.
And I think that's what they attempted to do. The PGA Tour said, PGA of America's got the Ryder Cup. It's amazing. Everyone gets all excited about it. It is, without a doubt, the most exciting thing in golf.
Oh, absolutely. But,
who knows? I don't know what. Maybe they'll tweak it. The Ryder Cup, you know, way back when used to just be, I think it was just the UK. And then they added.
Yeah, it was GB and I for the longest time, I think.
That's right. And then they added the rest of Europe, and then it grew it. So who knows what kind of tweaks they could make. But
for the President's Cup, yeah.
I don't really pay a lot of attention to it, to be absolutely frank.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a big fan of Mike Weir, and it'll be interesting to see if we get a couple Canadians on it. But anyway, moving on. So back to the Open Championship. You said something about Xander Schauffele at the PGA got a bad break. Off a good shot. And this is a theme I wanted to bring up with you because it came up in a conversation with Kent and another fellow, my buddy Grant. We sort of had a little debrief with Kent's experience last week at the Ontario Senior Am. Where in the third round, and this has happened to all of us, where he hit a couple of really good shots. And what I mean by that and what he meant was, you know, that as soon as you feel the club on the ball, we all have instant feedback. Good, 100%. Bad, thin, heavy, whatever we say, toe, heel.
Mm-hmm.
But on a couple of occasions early in the round, he made really good contact with it, and the ball just ended up in kind of a crappy spot.
Yep.
And it's, you know, we've talked about so many aspects of golf and mental, you know, sort of the mental side of the game as it comes to, as it relates to reacting to shots. But that's something I thought we really haven't talked a lot about, where you're hitting it well, but it's ending up in bad spots. So we've all had those things happen. And I thought I'd get your reaction to, you know, What can people do? Because that is a weird little thing. It's like, what can we do when we have hit a good shot and it ends up as Shoffley's did, in a divot or in a bad spot?
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone is really different in terms of how they react to everything. People who are generally high strung will have, they might peak or something, because that's the way they roll in life. It's up and down, up and down. Other people sort of are like a wave, which is kind of like me. If something happens, I'll stay pissed off for a while, and then I'll gradually ease out of it. Whereas, you know, my wife, Sandy, she's one of those people up and down. So we all have different ways of dealing with things. But often it's just, to me, it comes back down to so much of like, okay, what am I doing right now? What is happening to me, and really, does it serve me? There's all other kinds of things. There's like, you know, practicing acceptance and standing over the ball going, okay, wherever this goes, I'm okay with it. Mm-hmm. And that's all fine and good. But those are, in many ways, are like mental tips. No different, I think, than finish your backswing, or, you know, or turn your left hip or something like that. So I just think it's kind of like, you know, how do I want to show up in the world, and how do my reactions serve me? And because you are going to get bad breaks in everything.
Yeah,
it
absolutely.
Just doesn't matter. In life, that's just the way it goes, man.
You know, I'm sure Ken wouldn't mind me sharing this with you, because, you know, he was playing really, really well, had played two nice rounds to make the cut, and then just had a series of little things happen after very good swings that kind of set him off a bit. And I was talking about, you know, this thing that happened to me at Hamilton and at the tournament. You know, so the first 18 holes we played, I think I was 74 75, so I was playing pretty good.
Good for tournament golf.
And the guy I played with was the guy that won the tournament, so, and I didn't know that at the time. I just know that he and I were both playing very well. The first 18 holes he might have been 71 or 72, so we were close. And then we start the third nine, and I start off birdieing the 19th hole. I birdie it, par the 20th hole. So now on the third hole of the third nine, it's a very difficult hole there. I got 5 iron to the green, and I had to sort of hit a bit of a low punch underneath this tree. I hit it so good. Like, it was just exactly the shot I wanted to hit. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was in a bunker. It's a long par four. So I thought, perfect, I'm in the bunker. I'll either, you know, splash out, make par, bogey, and move on. But we couldn't find my ball.
Ooh.
It was, there. It, the kind of bunkers there, there is very high, deep, thick fescue.
Oh, no.
All around the green. And for a couple of minutes, I thought, I don't, when I saw my ball, you know, on its way, I was like, just like Ken said, I knew I hit it perfectly. I couldn't have hit it any better. And now we can't find my ball. And eventually one of the other guys in the group finds it. It's at the bottom of like a couple of feet of fescue. And I can't move it. I, you know, what I should have done, and I thought about it after, is I should have taken an unplayable.
Oh, did you try and hit it?
Yes. So there's two parts of the story. What I should have done. But yeah, oftentimes, when you're only 35 feet from the flag, yeah, it doesn't occur to you that that's... And I was so kind of unnerved by the idea that this thing had happened. I was like, well, what's going on? I thought I hit a great shot. And anyway, I'll make the story shorter. I made triple bogey because I took a slash at this ball. It moved a few feet. I got the next one just on the green, and then I three-putted from like whatever it was, and I made a seven. But let's take the first part about having hit a good shot and how I reacted. What I told myself going to the next tee was, you're playing great, you're hitting it well, just keep on going. So yep. it didn't. And you know, I played the rest of the nine, like one over par, maybe even. But one over or even for the next six holes versus like having a meltdown mm-hmm. and starting to spiral. Now, strategically, Decade Howard, if I had been in my right brain, I would have taken an unplayable because it was unplayable. And I would have gotten my fourth shot onto the green, certainly closer than I did, and yeah. probably wouldn't have three putted. But it, you know, and I say this to a lot of the guys I talk to or work with, and I have worked with. And inside of every triple bogey, there was a double bogey that you could have had. But it's human nature. You don't. Yeah. It's the aversion to making doubles.
Yes.
That sometimes has us making triples.
Yes, exactly. I don't know if that's everyone listening, write that down. That's a GSL.
Because I'll tell you, my fourth shot on the green after I hacked it out, it was in more fescue, and I didn't make a very good shot. So I three-putted, and so maybe I was momentarily a little bit unnerved, or it definitely was weird. I was weirded out because my second shot into that green was exactly what I wanted to hit.
Yeah. Well,
to Kent's point.
Well, man, I mean, this is where golf and life just so intersect. I can do everything I think could be perfect. I could be driving down the road, both hands, you know, one at 10, one at 2, doing everything, and somebody, you know, checks their phone and goes over and head-on collision or something.
Yeah.
Just shit happens in life, and you're going to have to roll with it because I don't know what option you really have. You could stamp your feet up and down like a five-year-old having temper tantrum.
Yep.
I don't know. It's kind of embarrassing to do that, and I'm not sure how it serves you. That's just the way it rolls, man. But the other thing that is the really hard part is in those situations is how do you step back and out of it? You see, if you had had a caddy, the caddy might have said, okay, here's some options, pal. You could do this. And then you could consider it. But when it's just you, it's just hard to remove yourself from it, from the situation. And I like what you just threw in there is that aversion to making double.
Yep.
You know, and so it clouds your judgment. And that really is the hard thing to do in golf is to step kind of out of it, if you will, and make a good sound decision devoid of, you know, any distraction or aversion to making doubles.
Yeah. Well, and I can just jump in and tell you, I didn't have the, I don't want to call it an epiphany, that's overstating it, but I didn't have the realization until, and I remember when it happened, I was walking to my second shot on the next hole and I just kind of had this kind of, so I sort of smiled to myself and went, yep. Oh yeah. I kind of went like that. I went, oh yeah. I could have taken an unplayable. And I just realized I was only hit. That would have put my fourth shot. I would have had a great lie for my fourth shot. And maybe I would have gotten that up and down for bogey. At worst, I'm making double. And but it's a combo where this is kind of two things going on at one time. So one of it was a strategic error that led to a triple. But the other thing was because I had made such good contact with my second shot, and it did what I wanted it to do. I was like 185-ish yards away from the green. So I was just hoping to get it somewhere near the green or in that bunker. And I think it was the act, and you said it well, like we kind of like, we get into a bit of a fog, and it was the act of trying to find my ball, which in that moment seemed preposterous to me. I just hit it over here. It's like yeah. over here somewhere.
That's right. I mean, that is the. I mean, you joke sometimes that you know on this show and other. You sort of need sometimes to have the peace of mind like a Zen monk.
Yeah.
It's just to roll with what is, instead of what should be, or what it could be. That is so hard, and that to me is one of the wonderful things about the game is that we can learn about ourselves. And like, what's really amazing is how much tournament golf you've played, tons and tons. You love doing it, and there you are. You kind of, no getting around it. You made a strategic error.
Absolutely,
and,
I did.
And the next hole, you go, you know, kind of the proverbial slap on the no, forehead, going, "Duh!"
Absolutely, I did.
I coulda, but So, you know, it's just, I say it over and over again. It's just, stack it up to another fucking growth opportunity.
Absolutely.
I learned something.
And I can tell you, and I'm going to move off my experience there, but on the very first hole of that tournament, it's a big, prestigious tournament, lots of good players, the beautiful, like the home of the Canadian Open now, just played. So there's a lot of pressure. I hit a terrible tee shot. Like, I smother hooked the shit out of it. Hit my second shot right of the green, right of the cart path, kind of underneath a Christmas tree. What are those? A pine tree.
Coniferous.
That's it. I've got to a pin. I've got no chance to hit the green. So I did the smart thing. I punched it out short of the green, hit it to about 7 feet, made that putt for bogey. So in that in the beginning of that tournament, I had the presence of mind. In fact, where I saw my second shot, I was absolutely prepared to make a double bogey. I wasn't going to start this tournament off with any more. In fact, I said that. Let's make a smart double here of that type of, or that was going through my head. Why 20 holes later, it didn't occur to me. And I can tell you why now, because I've had the epiphany. It's because on the first hole, I had no expectations. I was absolutely in the moment thinking, okay, it's first hole of the tournament. Let's make a bogey or double here. Let's not go crazy and make like a triple, because that would set me off. But by making that bogey, I was buoyant going to the next hole, and I played very nicely. Like I said, after kind of a scrappy first five or six holes where I was a couple over par, after that, I played the last eight holes of the last 10 holes of that front 18, like under par, like one or two under, one under par. My point is later in the round, I had some expectations. I was playing well. Anyway, moving on. So that's good shots gone bad. This next section is something that I saw, and I sent it to a bunch of my golf friends. I didn't
good shots gone bad. Good shots gone bad. It reminds me of a Far Side comic where it's like a bowl of what happens when potato salad goes bad. It's got the fridges open. The potato salad's got a gun and it's pointing at the ketchup and the mustard.
That's great. That's very funny. I didn't send this to you because I wanted to get your reaction. When we did this program that we're doing right now, in case you weren't sure. This is I can't remember, her name is Alexi Pappas. She's an Olympian. Explaining the rule of thirds. Have a listen. Hold on, let me take the volume off there. And here we go.
Me, after a particularly challenging workout where I could not hit my splits before going to the Rio Olympics, that was okay. It was the rule of thirds. And he was an Olympian, so I was, I always soaked in everything he said. And I was like, what's the rule of thirds? And he said, when you're chasing a dream or doing anything hard, you're meant to feel good a third of the time, okay a third of the time, and crappy a third of the time. And if the ratio is roughly in that range, then you're doing fine. So today was the crappy day along your dream chasing.
Right.
And if the ratio is off, like you feel too good all the time or too bad, then you got to look at if you're fatiguing or not trying hard enough or pushing yourself. So I think with those days that you're talking about where like creativity doesn't come or doesn't feel great, you still show up because maybe that's your crappy day, but it doesn't mean that you quit the goal. It means that you show up and live through that dip. Olympic.
So you can see why when I saw that, I immediately think golf, I sent it to a bunch of golfers. I want to get your reaction. I just want to quickly say, though, you could, not only does that apply to golf in general and golf on the improvement path, but it applies to rounds of golf as well.
Absolutely. So it reminds me of things we've said on this show before.
Yeah, things we've said on the show in 9 fucking years.
You've talked about people going into round of golf. Well, nothing bad is going to happen today.
Yes. Today's the day. It'll be great.
And it's just not realistic. It's just not the way it goes. And I think the important thing is, you're going to have days, where you're dropping putts, days when the putter's not working or whatever, or days when it's kind of okay. But it's like everything. You just show up, man. It's like you in terms of doing stand-up. When you've got a show come up, you have to show up to your writing desk. You have to, and you have to show up to practice. And as long as you're doing that, that's the best you can hope for. And you're going to have those okay, those great days, and those crappy days.
And we as golfers, you know, I wish I could. I've in the 9 years I've been trying to recall this Tom Watson quote. Maybe I should just look it up. But he talked about how, kind of touching on what that young woman just said about, you know, knowing that that's part of the golf equation, a third, a third, a third. But it's waiting for the good to show up. It's the hard part of golf because you have to be patient.
Oh.
Yeah, it's the waiting for the round to turn around is one of the hardest things. And, you know, it's very similar to something Marty Chuck always talks about. Our buddy from Phoenix, Tour Striker, Martin Chuck, talks about, you know, you're going to have moments in every round, like the triple bogey I took on that hole. You're going to have, I played a few men's nights since you and I saw each other. And, you know, last week I shot 74 with four birdies. So there were moments, and by the way, both of those, four of those birdies, two sets of two in a row. So there were moments in that round where I was going, you know, par, 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 birdie, birdie. But to shoot 74 with four birdies, there were also moments in that round where I went par, bogey, bogey, par, bogey. So that was the third of the round where it was kind of crappy. And then there were parts where I just went like par, 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 where I was kind of just going, okay, I got up and down, or I hit kind of a squirrely drive, but I was okay. But it's the waiting patiently is the hard part.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, I've kind of hit on a theme in the last week or so in my blogs, something I just call kind of staying with it. And that is really such a hard thing to do in all kinds of things, in golf especially. So I'll be brief here, but I had a silly thing happen to me. It was about 3 weeks ago at our church. We have an annual outdoor picnic. The woman who heads it up wanted me to put together this game. So it was this box of an axe throwing game. Yes. For the good children of Holy Rosary Church, I had to put together an axe throwing game. They were made out of plastic, so the injuries wouldn't be too severe.
Yeah, nothing says save your soul more like axes being thrown at each other.
That's right. That's right. They actually look like little crosses.
Aw.
Yeah, lightning bolt coming down and going to hit me any minute. Okay. So I opened this box. There is about 60 parts in it. It's like, it's big and small. And I went, oh my God. Really? This? It was just one of those things. And I was like, oh, because I don't really view myself as being very good detail-y things, you know, like putting things together, learning new board games, etc. But anyways, I just stayed with it. That's the phrase I came up with. So I didn't sort of succumb to my story of, oh, I'm crappy at this, or I'm going to need some help, or, oh my God, when is this going to be over? This is torture. I just stayed with it. And I ran into problems doing it. I had to take it apart a couple times and just seemed to come at dead ends. But at no point did I get into a story of, oh, I suck at this. And all. I just kept going. And eventually it came together and I was finished it. And it just struck me that that is like golf in terms of you just got to stay with it. Instead of like staying true to whatever your intention was for the day and that you're not going to go running off you know, searching for a swing fix, or that, oh, today's one of those days when golf hates me and the whole game is just lost. So it's kind of like in my latest blog and the one I'm going to post tomorrow, it's about the theme of staying with it.
And I'd also, I think that's great because staying with it not only applies to not giving up on a round. You know, I'm working with this young, aspiring professional golfer, young guy.
Cool.
Who works out of our club. He's a very, very good teacher. And he's just started playing tournament golf. So, you know, we sort of meet once a week now. And, nice. And I was talking to him yesterday about, you know, not creating a story. And he's a very good player. I played with him on men's night a couple weeks ago. He shot 68. Like, he's a definitely a high-level player in training. And we talked a lot about, you know, staying with the round. He recently played a round. He was a couple over after nine, which for a good player at his level is not very good. And then he made five birdies on the back nine and ended up shooting three under for the day. And I said, what you didn't know on the 10th tee that day is that five birdies were coming. And I said, you know, because he talked about being a little bit pissed off after the ninth hole. And I said, yeah, but if I had told you as you were walking off nine that you're about to make five birdies, the possibility was there to make five birdies on the next nine hole, what would your attitude be? And I said, the thing is, you need to have an attitude of possibility, not false hope. Like if you're, listen, if you're a 15 handicap, you're not making five birdies. But if you're a 15 handicap, you can have the best back nine you've ever had if you stay with it. Because not staying with it, you're going to shoot a million and go home feeling shitty about yourself. I know this because I've done that so many times. And as I said to my kid yesterday, my guy, he's like, kid, he's 28 years old. I said, you need to remember and be comforted by the fact that you can be having a shitty round. The third can be crappy, but you also know that it's possible to make five birdies in nine holes. That should give you great confidence the next time you're not having the best stretch of holes.
Yeah, stuff is gonna happen, good and bad, in a round of golf, and you know the key thing is it doesn't define you, but we come back to this one again. It's getting caught in the story. Oh my God, I'm at this level. I should be doing this, and oh, today's a crappy day, and we're just getting caught up in just ego nonsense. It's all just a frickin' story, and. And those players, I think, we come back to Xander Schauffele. I've never talked with a guy. I haven't read too many interviews. I don't think he's the most loquacious guy. How's that for a word?
Excellent.
But I think that just he is able, and I think really good players are able just to let go of the story, the narrative in their head, the drama, the shoulds and the coulds, and just be there and just deal with whatever's happening.
Absolutely.
And that to me is a resilient golfer. I've started coaching this young fellow. He's 13. He started off four bogeys on his first four holes. They ended up shooting 41. And I just said, congratulations, Mr. Resilient Golfer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just roll with it. But you know, to come back again, it's like one of the things is knowing that our performance really doesn't have any bearing on our performance the next day. It's this is the Fred Shoemaker-ism, is that it's like, what did I learn today about myself, and how, and you can take that forward. But you know, you could, your young protege there, what, he shot 68 or something like that?
68.
You know, so he shoots a 68, but that really is no guarantee that he's going to be 67 or 69 the next day.
Absolutely. And that's sort of the theme of the Alex Pappas quote about the thirds. It also relates. I found this online. It's, you know, a lot of these are, we've talked about 1,000 times, but it's one of Rotella's rules, and there's a bunch of them. Go look them up. They're pretty neat if you're listening. But one of the rules is, a golfer cannot let the first few holes, shots, or putts determine their thinking for the rest of the round. And I would say, as I want to use this because you use it, I love it. As a corollary.
We got some cool words going today.
Dude, loquacious, corollary. And by the way, if you're keeping track of Mr. O'Connor's expletives today, currently one gosh, one fuck, we're tied at 1-1. Going into the last period of play, gosh and fuck are tied. We may have to go to a gosh fuck shootout at the end of the show.
But I always leave. If we do, I leave. I never watch shootout.
So anyway, but that applies. That's applicable to what we're saying, because it's absolutely true of the first few holes. It doesn't determine. The first nine doesn't determine. You know, I've had rounds. I've had a lot of rounds, Tim. This year, I don't know what's going on with me, but I've told you, I've talked about it on the show, where I can't seem to get past the last two or three holes. had a lot of rounds where I shot 73, 4, or 5, where I've had two bogeys in the last three holes, and I finally said, hey, you could have had those two bogeys in the middle of the round. I'm capable of making bogeys or doubles at any point in the round, but I'm also, the point I'm trying to make, and I'll try to make it quickly, is what happens to you at any point in the round, to use Rotella's rule there, doesn't determine anything. It's mm-hmm. just happening, you know?
That's right.
In the wintertime, I had several rounds when I played in Mexico where I birdied three of the last holes I played, where I wasn't playing very well, and all of a sudden I finished well. Mm-hmm. So all of that is possible. Yeah. All of those are open.
Here's the first shameless plug for the book.
What book are you talking about?
Seven recipes for Hanukkah.
Seven Hanukkah recipes to things you love about latkes. What is the name of this book you keep speaking of? Are you talking about what is it called again? I don't have it in front of me.
Getting Unstuck.
Getting
Seven
Unstuck.
Transformational Practices for Golf Nerds. Yes. So in this...
By the way, it's ironic that it's called Getting Unstuck, and yet you're stuck still releasing this book.
I'm proofing it.
Proof this.
In the book, the upcoming book, I talk about Carl Morris or something. I learned from one of his DVDs way, way back when, and that if we invest ourselves in the story, particularly invest some high emotion into it, we'll remember it when it comes up. So if you've been having not being able to, quote, finish rounds, and you're getting frustrated by it, and, oh, damn it, and all that, then I'm not saying you are, but if you were, that means that when you start coming down the stretch in these tournament in rounds, because you've invested emotion, your brain's going to remember it again, because that's just the way our brain goes. We remember things of high emotion.
Yeah, for sure.
So it's being able to just sort of roll with things and not invest in them, you know. But the opposite is that when you say you finish a great round or you just nail a drive, that's why that whole thing with they used to talk about it with Tiger a lot, when he would absolutely nut a shot, he would do the little twirl.
Yeah.
That was his way of kind of anchoring that feeling, like, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I love that.
Nailed it. And that's the stuff you invest in, not so much, oh, misery and woe.
It was like an exclamation point on a good shot.
Exactly.
This also applies, and we're going to wrap up soon here, the idea of thirds, crappy,
okay,
and
great.
I'm just looking here. I'm sorry, I'm hesitating. I'm about to get a delivery, so I may have to throw it over to you for a monologue or a soliloquy.
Stan about to go off?
He's laying there right now having maybe it's my next-door neighbor, but Stan's right now in a bit of a couch coma. A dog couch coma. He hasn't moved in a couple of minutes. Are you still alive? So the idea of thirds is also applicable, Swing Thought Nerds, to training in golf. There are going to be days like, you know, whatever we're all working on, block practice, some random practice, etc., there are going to be times where your training is going to be, you know, you're going to feel it. You got it. There's going to be times where it's just not there. And there's going to be times where it's like a little bit of both, like a little bit, oh, I felt it a little bit. But what most people do, and you've seen this with, you know, over the years as well, we've both done it personally, which is you learn something and think, oh, this is exactly what I should be working on. And the second it stops working a little bit, you abandon it. And the problem with that is, you know, once you've determined, or a professional, somebody you're working with has determined this is something you need to work on, you got to stick through it, through all these shitty, uncomfortable reps.
Yep.
Or you'll never figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's right on. If one of our themes today is stay with it, then that's what you're talking about. And that is the one of the hardest parts of golf, and that's one of the key themes in this damn book that's coming out. But
oh, yeah.
is that people flit from thing to thing to thing, and when you do that, you don't build up skill. because it's a progression. It's just over time. It's the way our brain works. It's the way we learn things, is doing them over and over again and getting deeper in that experience. But if, let's say you've decided on something you're working on, say you're working alone, not with a coach. This is the thing you're working on. But, you know, you go to the range and it stops working, you go to something else. Well, I guarantee you, or it's pretty plausible, that in 4 weeks or so, you're working on the fifth different thing.
That's right.
And thus, you're just no further ahead because you're still in this zone, this very, I'm not sure what the phrase is, but it's kind of like you've just kind of gone down like one little layer.
Yes.
And working on it. Whereas when you get really good at something, you're going down 10 and 12 and 14. That's when you get deeper and deeper into the experience of what you're doing. That's how you learn and build skill.
Yeah.
And it's staying with it.
I use video. I videotape myself when I'm actually doing block practice, which I did like a couple hours of it on Friday. I did about an hour yesterday. I never do it without videotaping my swing.
You wise man, sir. That's why you're the GSL.
And I'm not the only one that does it. But the reason I do it is because if I'm trying to do something, like right now I'm working on, you know, posting up a little bit earlier with my left leg, just making sure it's straight. My only thought is I want it straightened before my club gets to the ball. Now, you can feel that all day long, but until you see it, because, you know, feel isn't real. Puke. I'm all this stupid cliches in golf. Feel's not real. Shut up. That one for sure is, I can see it. It's I get my own empirical data. I get my own feedback because I can see, and as I do it slowly, did it straighten before the club got to the ball? And I would say that if you're working alone on something, just take a couple of videos of it.
Oh, that's so wise, because the more feedback you get, the better. Because if your only feedback is ball flight and what you're thinking about, you're not getting the whole story by far. And so one of the things that I've been talking about for a while now is feeling what's going on, and what when you hit that shot, what did you feel in your hands? You know, are you kind of doing a very quick debrief of what do you feel in your body? Am I off balance? Where did my weight go? How did my body feel going through? It's actually when you hit your horrible shots you learn the most.
Absolutely.
But it's staying there, but having video to look on is amazing. Because it's really good feedback, and we need that. The problem is that so many people are very self-conscious, and they don't. And they're like, you, sir, wouldn't give a flying fuck. Yeah. There you go. Well, two.
I'm sorry. Okay. Hold on. Was that 2 bucks?
Yeah, great.
We're up to fucks are currently leading. Gosh, is 2-1, and we're well into the end of the third period.
That you wouldn't care?
No.
I'm just doing like this.
You mean they're self-conscious about the idea of seeing them videotape their swings. Oh, yeah, I get that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, anyone who does anything at a high level has invested themselves, and you just do what's necessary to do it.
Dude, I am mocked for so many things. Right now, my warm-up...
Of course you are.
Right now, I get mocked because my warm-up, beside all the stretching I do, now I've got a green stretchy band that I use to stretch my shoulders. I get mocked for that. I'm like, I'm going to men's day today. There's 100 and whatever guys, there's 150 guys playing, but at any given time, there's 50 or 60 on the range. How many have alignment sticks down? I'm going to say 2. I'm one of them. Because I don't know. Here's the other thing I don't understand. I'm around a bunch of guys our age who I just watch, you know, I'm stretching. It takes me 10 minutes to even get a club out of my bag. They get to the range, they throw their clubs over here, and they just start taking full swings.
Exactly. Yep.
I'm like, how do you do that?
Well, you know what? They don't know.
I know.
So many people, just they don't know, but they don't, a lot of them don't care. That's for one thing. That's fine. If it's about going and have a few pops and fun with your buds, that's great. But it's, a lot of it, I think, unfortunately, is men being very self-conscious.
Absolutely.
I want to get him on our podcast. I had a I did a profile for ClubLink. James Fort at Rattlesnake Point, 75. He moved up to the red and white tees. Mm. He always thought the reds were the ladies' tees. Well, he finally got over that, and the guys would bug him, and guys do bug him. They, where's your skirt, James? You know, and it's just there's so much horse shit with the way guys, you know, respond and just like keep themselves sort of shackled with that nonsense. But I mean, dude, you're a good golfer because you.
Well, now I get what you're saying.
Like, necessary.
I will say this, that I don't care if people see me taping my swing. Just a little pro tip for you if you ever do it. What I usually do is once I'm warmed up, I do some of whatever I'm working on, I'll do a little bit before I film it. And then what I generally do is turn it on. It's tedious, but I will hit three to four balls trying to do what I'm trying to work on, which is right now trying to straighten my left leg. And I'll do it, and then I'll stop, and then I go and look at the thing, and I'll see which one of those five swings, did I accomplish it? Then I edit it, get rid of the ones I didn't, and just keep the ones I did, so I can go back and look at it and go, oh, that's what it looks like when I do it right. Mm-hmm. But to your point, you made a really good point, too, about people that only get feedback from how the golf ball is working, because the reason that's such a it doesn't help you is this, because let's say, just using this example, trying to straighten my left leg, if I don't videotape it, how do I know that my old swing didn't produce that great shot? Because that's what most people are going to do. If I tell somebody to do this with your golf swing, you say you might try it and you might think you're doing it, but when the moment of truth comes, which is you're trying to, again, self-consciousness, you don't want to hit a bad shot, so you will do whatever swing, which is your normal swing. I tell you, I know I'm doing it correctly is when I usually hit shitty shots.
Yeah,
because
there you go.
Yeah, exactly. When the ball doesn't do it, like I was doing a drill yesterday, this famous drill, Tiger made it famous, where you basically go to the top of your swing, stop, and then try and hit the ball from there. Not moving it to your normal position, but going to and stopping, like Cameron Young does. Mm-hmm. All I did I didn't care. There were some people there who didn't know me, but I literally topped for about 15 minutes yesterday. All I did was top 7 irons and 6 irons. Topped it. Couldn't get the ball airborne. But I wanted to stop, and I was filming myself. I wanted to stop in that position and see what it looked like. It's called the freezer drill. But if you do it, so every once in a while, I started getting the ball airborne. And again, I was just doing my old swing.
Yeah. When you do your old swing, and like, what I wanted to say here was, until you really learn or mastered, say, a new move or whatever it is in your swing,
mm-hmm.
you're going to, if you start to swing at full speed and
yes,
you're trying to take it to the golf course, you are going to draw from your old self, if you will.
Absolutely.
You're going to draw from all those old patterns, because as our friend, Dr. is, oh man, Pryor? Is it?
Richard Pryor. No, Raymond Pryor. Yes, Dr. Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
From the Live at the Sunset Strip. Dr. Raymond Pryor, what did he say?
Well, he says the brain hates change.
Yes.
And in particular, in a round of golf, when you're, say, trying to score, you're trying to beat your buddies, whatever, and you're trying to get over the fact you made double bogey, you're going to default to your old ways that your brain works. And the only way to make, if you want to get better at this game, you have to invest yourself in getting uncomfortable,
yes,
doing things slowly, taking a look, and doing what you're doing in terms of looking at the video. That has so much more value than hitting. I mean, in the time that you've spent, you know, videotaping, reviewing, you could hit upwards of, say, 15 golf balls.
Oh, absolutely.
I would say there's more value in looking at what you're doing, because you just get you have a different experience being able to see what's going on as opposed to just feeling it. And just quickly, we've all been to driving ranges at a public driving range where you see some guy with his buddies, and he has got that fire and fallback swing. every once in a while, he absolutely nails it. It goes forever, but it's not that much different than a regular golfer. Every once in a while, with your old move that you want to get, you can still hit it great every once in a while.
Absolutely.
But you won't make the progress.
And I think you made a really important point, which is that's why oftentimes whatever it is you're going to work on or you're working on doesn't often transfer to the golf course right away. Because in the moment of trying to make a score, don't want to look weird in front of your buddies. Now, how many times have we told people to back off, to back away from a shot?
Mm-hmm.
And when I do it around other sort of tournament players, you know, people with experience, they don't bat an eye. But a lot of guys are afraid to do that around their Saturday morning group because they're going to get sort of like, oh, here we go.
It's the U.S. Open.
Yeah, U.S. Open. I want to wrap up because I know you got to go. So let me just say thank you to everyone listening and to Double D from the Bridgewater match. I remember you now. And I thought it was, I think, you know, we haven't done this because I do it on the Humble and Fred Show, which is our title sponsor. We need to acknowledge them more than once in a round. So here we go, TaylorMade.
Every driver has an inertia number. The higher the number, the more forgiving the driver. Now, golf is about to discover the first ever driver that combines TaylorMade speed with the forgiveness of 10K inertia. The all-new QI10. More forgiveness means more long, straight drives, even on off-center strikes. The days of missing the fairway are numbered. Get ready to experience your drives in 10K with the all-new QI10. Only from TaylorMade. Visit TaylorMadeGolf.ca.
And for you keeping track, the score at the end of the third period, it is 2-1 fucks over Gosh. And that's always impressive. By the way, I know we don't normally have on-air or during recording meetings, but I will be unable to record next week because my older brother, Smart Dave, is in town. But I would be able to either, well, we'll talk about it, either Monday or on the weekend, but we'll see. We'll have a quick meeting after we stop recording.
Yep.
Okay. And just another programming note, I was honored to be asked. I know you've done the show, but I'm going to be on The Mind Factor
with
Dr. Carl Morris.
That's fantastic.
Who we got to know through this program. I've also had occasion to work with him one-on-one, and I'm very excited to have a chance to talk about my golf journey.
Yeah, okay.
I wonder, what's more cringeworthy? Golf journey? What did we just say a few minutes ago that I thought was super douchey? I can't remember.
I can't remember that.
Because it was all of 10 minutes.
That's it.
The fuck's wrong with us? On the next time we get to record, though, I do want to, because you, again, being one of the nicest people I know, I do want to get your opinions on something that I saw recently. It was in a tournament, a Ryder Cup thing I played, Senior Ryder Cup.
If we can do this quickly. We'll do it. Let's do it.
All right. I played with a dude the other day. He was kind of a quirky dude. And he had iron covers.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought to myself, I don't think I could. First of all, I have no friends that have them. And I thought to myself, am I the kind of person, am I so judgy that I couldn't be friends with somebody who had iron covers? Like, and I'm talking about, they were like soft socks that he took off and on every time he hit a shot. And I thought, like, if I knew nothing else about this guy, I already thought he's a bit of a nerd anyway, but if I knew nothing else about him, oncologist, saves lives, does research, has contributed to children's charities. But if I knew nothing of him other than he had iron covers, that's all I need to know. That's all I would need to know.
Well, is it? I guess it's not quite in the same territory as playing with a guy who's got a ball retriever, you know, who's kind of a good player. You know, like, no good player has a ball retriever ever.
No.
But my own experience is that I played with a guy last year on my Senior Ryder Cup team last year who had iron covers.
Oh, yeah.
And super guy, eccentric and funny,
yeah,
and a great guy to play with. And I love talking with him. So it's all over the map. But yeah, that, I think that we should do a show in which we just explore golf eccentricities, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I'm in.
People's routines on lining up golf balls.
Yeah.
You know, that could include your thing about never hitting, using a tee that's in the ground on a par three.
Never do it.
It was from a bad shot.
Someone hit a bad shot, they leave the tee there. It's just the worst.
Got bad golf stink on it.
Well, I will, though. I will use a broken tee. Like, if a broken tee's on the ground on a par three, I'm using it. If you leave your tee in the ground, it's pretty much guaranteed it's because you're pissed you did a bad shot. Tim O'Connor. Tim, O'ConnorGolf.ca. The Substack's there as well. One day, I don't know what's going to happen. What will happen first? Kamala Harris becomes the next president, or Tim's book is available for all of us? I mean, I've read it. I just feel bad for the rest of you. And there will be another Swing Thoughts in the next week to 10 days. Okay? I promise. All right, everybody. Oh, and I will also tell you on next time, I went on a golf date with a woman who can play golf. That was quite something.
Wow, okay. Oh, yeah. Well, that's something to look forward to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and played the forward tees.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm all over it. I'm going to be a plus three from the Reds.
There you go.
And don't forget the Humble and Fred Show. You can get all the information about Humble. HumbleandFredRadio.com. We'll see you next time. Well, now you step inside, but you don't see too many faces.